It became more important to be compliant than to be authentic, and we adopted rigid beliefs about what should be. We believed that if we could just get it right, things would be okay. We looked to others for the rules that defined us and for assurance that we were getting it right. Our self-esteem hinged on gaining others' approval. When we got it wrong, our sense of security and self-worth evaporated. We saw ourselves as flawed. For many of us, that led to shame, fear, secrecy, dishonesty, manipulation, control, depression, and isolation. Some of us rebelled against rules and authority and became sullen, defensive, or arrogant. As a result of holding these mistaken beliefs about ourselves, we often passed them along to others. When they did not conform, we may have judged them harshly, cultivating blame and resentment, thus perpetuating the cycle of codependency. We didn't really get to know other people. Our lives became an elaborate play in which we were acting a part. We interacted with others based on how we perceived their roles related to ours. Without an effectual internal sense of security or well-being, we were unable to maintain functional relationships. We could not identify with other people as whole human beings. To us, they were just characters in our life story. Trying to get it right cost us dearly. We didn't own ourselves. We did not know or trust our own thoughts and feelings. We were unaware of our own contributions to the events in our life. Hiding our true selves in order to fit in kept us isolated and unable to ask for help. Constantly denying our true thoughts and feelings was stressful and exhausting. We may have used alcohol, drugs, food, smoking, activities, sex, or preoccupation and obsession with others to escape. Being in denial, we were left with a sense of emptiness. Our relationships became increasingly disappointed. Ultimately, we found ourselves locked into a compulsive pattern of belief and behavior that could not satisfy us. So I want to tell you a story about what my life started out with, and I'm going to tell it to you twice. So I was born to a woman at 17 who was into alcohol and food and drugs and men. And my first biological dad, he decided to leave this earth of his own accord when I was maybe a couple of years ago. But while my mom was pregnant, she let me know that he threw her out of the car and left her. And then she went on to let me know that she was often so affected that she didn't remember where she left me. And that she remembers one time she couldn't remember where she left me for 2 weeks as an infant. So she went on to marry a second time, and he was put in jail or prison for being a pedophile, but not by my mom, by somebody after us. And then third time she married at 23. I was 7, and he and I didn't get along at all. And I went on to perpetuate that over and over and over again in my life. So I'm going to start the timer again, and I'm going to tell that story all over again. And please bear with me if I cry. And this is just my beliefs, okay? Please, oh, please know that these are just my beliefs. This is not CODA endorsed. And your higher power is your higher power. But my life began as spirit with a lot of other spirits. And maybe they're angels, I don't know. I call them angels. And before I came down here on this earth to get what my soul needed from this particular lifetime, they all agreed to play parts to get me what I needed. And I agreed to play parts to get them what they needed. And I imagine that they said, I'll be stepfather number one. I'll be stepfather number two. I'll be the biological father. I will provide all the things you need. And then they said, oh, this is going to be hard for you. I'm going to go down there with you. And one of those angels said, I'll be your sister. And so I started this journey with a lot of people helping me get what I needed from this life. And maybe it wasn't super fun and super easy. Oh, but it has been rewarding. So when I came to CODA, I came by it honestly. I came in 14 years ago. I came constantly. I didn't stop for 13 years. And at 13 years, I needed to go learn something else. And so I had to join another program. And I was in a program for 3 years before this. I was in Overeaters Anonymous before this. And now I'm in a program for hiding called Underrunners Anonymous. But when I came here, I thought I was coming because my partner was an ass and I didn't know how to make him act better. And when I got my first sponsor, which wasn't until 6 months after being in program, she repeatedly told me, I don't want to hear about him. He didn't come to the meeting to get recovery. You did. But I couldn't focus on myself. I mean, it was so hard for me. I'd be driving down the road and I would be taking his inventory all of the time. I am surprised I had any friends for those 11 years because that's all I talked about was what an ass he was. And it took me 7 years in recovery to move out of living with him, 7 years of CODA to move out from living with him. And it took all 11 years for me to leave. But I call him my teacher because he taught me so, so much. And when he agreed to come and be one of those angels on this earth for me, I don't think he had any idea how hard that was going to be. And so I wanted to share that with you. Some things that made coming into program necessary is I gained 25 pounds in the first month we moved in together. And I knew something was wrong. And I went to Overeaters Anonymous, and my sponsor said, you need to go to Al-Anon. So I went to Al-Anon, but it just so happened the meeting I went to, there was all of these women who were like 30 years old talking about their miserable husbands that they'd still been married to for 30 years. And I was like, no, that can't be me. Like, I have to leave this man. And so my sponsor in Al-Anon real quick said, no, you belong in CODA. And so I came to CODA. And one of the biggest problems that made me have to come to CODA was that I was the higher power, and so were tons of other two-legged creatures. So we're all higher powers. And even today, on a regular basis, when I show up somewhere, I have to check to see who in my codependent little body, my inner child's mind, might qualify to be a god. I have to do it over and over again. I have to do it at the grocery store. I have to do it at my recovery meetings. I have to do it at work. I have to search for who might be a qualifying in her mind God. And I have to be very careful to remember my God doesn't have two legs. None of those people can be that for me anymore. So I wanted to read, I'm just going to read from a few things. I'll tell you what they are, you know, in case you want to reference them later. This one is called Communication and Recovery. I love, this was one of my favorite pamphlets. Codependent communication is caused by one primary force, fear, and the need to control it. Fear masquerades as truth and holds us in a false belief that we are unworthy and others' reactions are dangerous to us. Our communication patterns often reflect our fear. For example, when we are angry, when we are with angry people, we may walk on eggshells. However, in some situations with angry people, we may discover that we have been habitually irresponsible or dishonest with ourselves and others. Using manipulative, weasel words when we communicate. These are expressions such as, I'm not sure, when we are sure, or maybe, when we know it's definitely, or I'm sorry, how many times have we said that? I'm sorry, when we're really not sorry, or I guess, when we're not guessing at all. With any of the above expressions, we may or may not be aware of our own true feelings. If we are aware, but not being verbal or honest, then we are being controlled by our own fear. If we are not aware of our true feelings, then such expressions may allow us to continue to stay out of touch with those feelings. See, my gods, they are nearly always angry people or victims in my world. That's my own world. If the person is overwhelmed with self-pity, thinks everyone should do everything for them, and that they are not accountable for anything because the whole world has screwed them, that will, and I will pick up on it energetically. I can feel it in my chest. And if you, and then on the other hand, if the person is angry and ready to fight and they're going to pick a fight, they're going to look for a fight, I can feel it energetically. And that those two types of people will instantly become my gods. Because as this pamphlet said, others' reactions, I perceive them as dangerous to me. And so I engage in these behaviors like people pleasing, mind reading. I'm going to call it the, the jumping beans, the jumping bean stance, where I'm energetically jumping all over everywhere to just please make them either not mad or not attached to me. And that is not a way for me to connect. And, you know, like the Threads of Recovery said, we don't really get to know other people. Our lives become an elaborate play in which we're just acting a part. And, you know, having conflict, disagreeing just randomly is super comfortable for a healthy person. I mean, they don't mind that I don't think like they do. They don't mind that I can't agree with what they say. I feel that they see it really clearly when I agree on the outside, but I don't really agree on the inside. I think that's pretty clear. And that speaks to those the characteristic of low self-esteem in our literature. So I want to read another pamphlet. This one is called Step 11. These are some pretty old pamphlets. So if y'all are like, did you get those from the 1920s? Yes, I did. so I'm just going to read this. In step 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a higher power. By working step 11, we opened ourselves to the nourishing light that conscious contact with God provides. When we were ready, our everyday lives and relationships could reflect the peace and serenity that would come from our conscious contact with God.
At working step 11, we were given another reprieve from our codependent thinking and behavior. We learned the difference between our will for ourselves, what we thought another's will for us might be, and God's will. We were reminded that our higher power was not us or another person, place, or thing. Our lives became simplified. The question that remained for us was, am I willing to pray only for knowledge of God's will for me during those times when I want my will so much? And see, when I came to this program, I think it's kind of a joke, actually, that a lot of people come in like this, but I came in like, oh, what do you mean? I use people? I manipulate people? Oh, no. I just care so much about everybody. I'm always just trying to give everybody what they want. And then when I hear newcomers come in and be like, oh yeah, I'm not manipulating, calculating. I'm definitely not running a play with all the pawns. You know, I always think like, yeah, I remember when I felt that way, trying to work everything out to be in what I perceive to be the best interest for me. Whether that meant that the person across from me was not yelling at me, whether that meant that they believed my lies, whether that meant that, you know, when I came into this program, I actually, I fell for the bait and switch of, hi, can you come, I love you, can you come live with me? Can you quit your job and come work for my company? Super, now you have no income, and no job, and no house. And I don't know if y'all have ever heard that joke. So, I allowed myself to be brought into a place where, what do you call a codependent with no girlfriend? Homeless. So I allowed myself to be brought into a place where I couldn't support myself. So I thought I needed to be super manipulating. And so I'm going to go on to read this. You know, I had a lot of will for him. I just needed him to change. That was all. If he would just change, everything would have been fine. And I knew exactly how he was supposed to change. Following that, it was suggested that we ask God to empty our minds of all the noise and chatter. Some of us would focus our attention on just one part of the prayer, or on an image that the prayer evoked in our minds. Others paid attention to the stillness within themselves. Each of us discovered our own way, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and the power to carry that out. As we focused our attention on this part of step 11, a question arose: how do I know what God's will is for me? This was something many of us had pondered. It became a special concern to us when we had a decision to make. There were many opinions. God's will for me is to be happy, joyous, and free. God's will for me is to work the 12 steps and to recover from my dis-ease. God's will for me must be to have this job, this relationship, this car, this experience. What we learned was the answer for one was not necessarily the answer for all. And most importantly, we realized that no other person could answer this question for us. It was ours to discover. As we continued to meditate and pray, making it an important part of our daily experience, our path was revealed. It may not have been a dramatic experience. Rarely was a CODA member struck by spiritual lightning. In fact, the message often came in ways we least expected it. Some of us found God's will to be the way we lived our lives when we were in conscious contact with our higher power. Often we experienced it as the capacity, step by step, to choose healthier relationships. We may have experienced God's will as an ability to accept all the good that came our way. There were even those among us who were learning to clarify the difference between self-awareness and self-obsession. Believing this new understanding to be God's will. In many cases, we found that our lives just got easier to live, even when the situations in which we found ourselves were difficult or confusing. And that's been my experience. I don't know, I can't really talk about spiritual lightning. That was some slow lightning, but I've had people tell me, I wish you a slow recovery, you know, and now I've been in recovery for 20 years total, and a lot of things have been removed from me, a lot of defects have been removed from me, I'm very grateful. A lot of them still remain, and I have to deal with those. But the thing that happened is it just started happening where I just started to believe that where I was where I was supposed to be. And I started looking for signs, you know, like I would say, okay, God, I think my will is this. And I think their will is this. And I think I'm powerless over XYZ. I had a little notepad stuck to my car for a long time. And I would just, when I got frustrated at work, I would just start writing on there because I worked out of my car. All the things I was powerless over that day. And something just happened where I felt like I started to hear God's will. Or sometimes things happen where one day I just got up and walked out the door and God's will was waiting for me actually on the street over when I went to go for a walk. I don't know how he got me out of the house at noon, but I am fully convinced that my higher power is not just one person. I grew up very, very religious, and I think that the Bible was kind of tainted to tell me what my mom wanted me to do, and that's how it was kind of enforced upon me. And being the rebellious, arrogant, haughty person that I was, and liar that I was, who knows what she really said and put upon me, but I that's how I took it. And so I couldn't do the God of the New Testament. For me, I had to do my own higher power. But when they came in, that was the God I believed in. And I was so glad that they told me, you know, it's the God of your own understanding. And the God of my understanding has changed many times over my life. And so I have wondered if the legion of angels that God gives me and my higher power is, you know, I didn't think one God was enough, apparently. So I needed a legion of angels, and then I had my higher self, and then above that I had God, who I am a businesswoman, so I imagined that God delegated. And so I feel like there are angels all around me. I was, in the Bible it says that they are in the trees, which let me know that they were close enough to where I could see them, and I imagine that they sleep with me, and that they're kind of shoving me to the left and to the right on how they want me to be of service, or what they want me to say, or where they want me to go. And I believe that before I was in a lot of resistance, and I was just rebelling all the time, and I didn't know how to come inside and find my own intuition. And I believe that now I relax and take it easy, and I let them move me. And I work very, very hard at letting them move me, because the results are always better when they move me. Always, always, always better. So we have about 5 minutes left, and I just wanted to read some thoughts and suggestions on healthy communication to close. Communication is a way that I show my own self-worth. You know, words themselves don't do it, but in the way that I communicate, I show other people my value. And I don't mean the words, I mean the way I communicate, I show other people how much I value myself. And so I just wanted to read these thoughts and suggestions on healthy communication. I avoid obsessing over other people's problems and shortcomings. Obsessing over others is deceptive. It prevents me from focusing on my unhealthy behavior and attitudes. I discover my options, even though they may be painful and uncomfortable choices. I put myself first. and others I care about a close second. I am gentle and considerate of my needs and wants. Others around me may react negatively to my changes. Some family systems perpetuate dysfunction because they are accustomed to dysfunction or because the behavior is comfortable. A non-healthy family system may become more unstable when one person within the system pursues healthy ways of relating. And I just want to say about that, that in my experience, my parents came around. My parents are very respectful of me. They are very kind and very supportive, even though they both do struggle a lot still with many of the things I came into program with. I avoid, and I also want to say, when I changed, other people changed. I avoid justifying or explaining myself, even when I feel a compulsion to do so. And I want to say that when I began speaking today, I wanted to say, I am unqualified for this. I don't know why they asked me. I'm very humbled by the honor, but I wanted to start out and be like, I just want y'all to know, I'm unqualified for this. But that's something that CODA also taught me, was I don't just not explain myself. I don't just justify myself, not justify myself. I don't cut myself down. Like, I don't do that anymore. I don't say things against myself anymore. Well, I try very hard not to. I speak slowly, firmly, and clearly when drawing boundaries. Sometimes I delay my immediate response to a question or comment to give myself time to think and feel. I prepare for difficult conversations with my family. I talk to my sponsor and other recovery friends before and after the conversation. And today, it's not my family that I have to prepare for. It's many other people that I have to prepare for in business. Not because of them, just because of me and the triggers that I feel. I notice when I'm trying to control others with my words, tone, volume, or non-stop talking, which for me often ends up in a lot of dishonesty when I find myself non-stop talking, or if others are trying to control me in the same way. When visiting my family or anyone else, even people in recovery, the people that I love the most, I try to notice when I need to leave or spend time alone for a while, and I plan sanity strategies ahead of time. For me, sometimes that means going to the bathroom. I keep a notes app, and in my notes app, I have a notes for prayer, and notes for affirmations, and notes for visualization, and notes for journaling, and notes for gratitude. And there are times when I just need to go to the bathroom and start making a gratitude list. I need to go to the bathroom and start making an acceptance list, what I'm powerful over, what I'm not powerful over. There's a lot of times when I get into fear and I can't be in love. So I need to make a list of, what are you afraid of? What's going on? Are you tired? Do you need to go home? So those are some things that I wanted to share. I hope some of that was beneficial.